Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday, we strive to expose the destructive myths which are associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, and with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to understand what is actually occurring behind the headlines while predicting how these events will shape our world. This morning, we will focus our second hour of the program instead of the first on the news that is shaking our world, because we're going to be engaged with IQ Al-Rasuli, a world's expert on all things Islam and the consequence of tolerating Islam as our world is currently doing. During our first hour today, we're going to consider Yahweh's testimony. We're going to consider his covenant, because his is the only credible, reliable, truthful voice in an exceedingly troubled world. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion over the next 2 hours, is 877-376-45. A couple of days ago, we, in the second hour, two women, both who have accepted the terms and conditions of Yahweh's covenant, of which there are five conditions of the covenant. We have to walk away from corruption, particularly as God speaks of Babel and Babylon, of religious and political corruption, so that we can come to trust and rely on Yahweh instead. That we walk to him, seeking love, by following the path that he has provided that makes us perfect in his eyes, in every possible way. And that we focus especially on the covenant itself, so that we come to understand its terms and conditions and its benefits, so that we can respond appropriately to it. And that as parents, we circumcise our sons as a sign that we're committed to making our family model the earthly family. Well, these women had accepted the terms and conditions of the covenant. Their spouses, their husbands, had not. And so there was a discussion as to what do we do under those circumstances. So I'm going to share an insight here on the covenant, and then at my invitation, I've asked Frank and his wife, Diane, to return to the program, and we're going to listen to them share some of their insights in all of this. They come at this at a uniquely powerful position, having served as family and marriage counselors as Christians, and now performing the same role, but as those who have come to reject Christianity so that they could embrace the terms and conditions of the covenant. And they have more that I think is germane to our understanding than we had time to consider yesterday. But Frank, if you and Diane wouldn't mind just holding on a moment. This morning as I came in, I wrote the following, and I wanted to share it. I think it is germane to our discussion. We are free, all of us, to ignore, to reject, to alter, or to accept the conditions of the covenant. The consequences of ignoring and rejecting its terms is being ignored and rejected by God. That's pretty straightforward. We can ignore and or reject the conditions of the covenant, and the consequence is being ignored and rejected by God. Both Yahweh and Yahusha make this point very clear. No penalty, no hell, no. Just simply, I don't know you, you don't know me. That's it. You lived your life, it's now over. But there is a penalty for promoting alterations, such as those expressed in Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And that penalty is internal, eternal incarceration as a result of having committed what Yahweh calls an unforgivable sin. It's a crime against God and humanity, one delineated in the third statement on the first tablet, a statement that we'll get to in this program fairly soon. And the benefits associated with accepting the conditions of the covenant are immortality, redemption, adoption, enrichment, and empowerment. All wonderful things, the kind of things that we would want for our own children. Those who cling to the popular myths that are associated with religious or political promises are expressly excluded from the covenant because they are considered to have broken the first codicil of the marriage vow, which is exclusivity. You know, in any marriage vow, no matter if it is secular or sectarian, fidelity is the one caveat that they all include. You know, if you're going to marry someone, you are expected to have an exclusive relationship with that individual. That is what marriage represents. More than anything, that is what marriage represents. But those who do not know and expressly rely on Yahweh as their Father and Savior, those who do not walk to Him, seeking love by answering His invitations to meet with Him, to be welcomed by Him, and those who do not closely examine and carefully consider His covenant, its terms and conditions, are expressly excluded from this relationship. Now, while most anyone can go from excluded to included at most any time, the further down the political and religious path we go, the harder it becomes to find the way back home. That is not to suggest that those of us who have been following the wrong path, as Frank and Diane and I have all done, even promoting the wrong path, as we have done, won't find the Torah along the way. It's there. But that over time, we become less receptive and thus less open to it. Once we accept, we are accepted. Nothing we have done previously matters, at least to God. We could have been an axe murderer, or worse, a pope. We are forgiven. That does not mean that we won't make, to make amends, to acknowledge that what we have done in the past is wrong. Because once we know what is right, sharing this becomes our priority. Nothing, however, that we do from this point on can estrange us from Yahweh, giving us enormous freedom. But that is not to suggest that we subsequently reject the terms and conditions of the covenant, because, frankly, there's no motivation for doing so. There isn't a scenario where that hypothetical makes any sense. And while we have the liberty to sin in other ways and will, the only consequence of our poor choices is that our relationship with Yah is temporarily stunted, as is our witness, potentially depriving a wayward soul from recognizing the truth. Now, the reason I bring all this up is that in the context of our marriages, ought not we provide the same accommodation? When our spouses stumble, so long as the error is other than infidelity or direct and overt opposition to Yahweh, shouldn't we accept the individual? Well, simply acknowledging that the behavior is not conducive to our love growing. I share this to provide perspective for those who have accepted the conditions of the covenant and are married to someone who has either ignored or rejected its conditions, but who is not actively engaged promoting an alteration of its terms. That is, after all, the only unforgivable sin, and perhaps should be the only act that would cause us to reject our spouses. With that introduction, welcome back to the program, Frank, and I understand you have your lovely wife, Diane, with you today.
Good morning. How are you doing today, Yada?
Good. It's good to hear your voice, as always.
Hello there.
Hi, Diane. For those that don't know, Diane is Frank's wife. Yesterday after the program, because we were talking about marriage, Diane was tapping on Frank's shoulder and said, you know, you forgot to say the following. And part of that was, of course, we ran out of time. And so they shared with me some thoughts that are really germane to marriage, particularly in the covenant. I really wanted to give them the opportunity to share them with you. So please, the floor is yours, as they say, Diane and Frank.
Okay, well, first of all, when you introduce this, it makes it sound like we're know-it-alls and professionals and all of this. And first of all, we are people who believe that we were called by God to just talk to family. So.
No, I would never. I would never accuse you of being professional.
I
don't mean that, and I don't. Yeah, I mean that to be funny too. That's true. You know, it's, as I say, a scholar is someone who knows many things and understands nothing. I would never accuse someone who is doing the right thing as being professional. The moment we claim that we are qualified from a human standard is the moment we disqualify ourselves from being useful in terms of a spiritual standard.
Right, and I didn't want to be an expert, which is a drip under pressure.
So. Okay, there you go. Well, so we're in the same boat in this regard.
So anyway,
but you have a lot of practice. You have a lot of practice at this.
Yes, we have a lot of practice, and primarily in the marriage and family rescue and intervention that we did. The objective that we were after was to try to help families reconnect husbands and wives, and to get back to the unit that they had started with, the concepts, the ideas about being male and female. Why did I want to marry you in the first place? The procreation, all of the things that started out, because as we progress in marriage and we start to have individual changes, which they're all our changes, all of a sudden we forget a whole bunch of those things and we just get focused on the problem as opposed to all of the history and all kinds of wonderful things that started us out.
Having counseled, not professionally, but friends of mine who were in the process of getting divorced, it is amazing how at that time the original attraction between the couple turns for naught, and the only thing that they can do is to overemphasize the flaws. It's just like the individual is just nothing but, becomes nothing but a series of flaws, and that's all they can focus on, is all of the negative. And yet, you know, in a marriage relationship, no matter how flawed the other individual may be, we are so intertwined in so many different ways, you know, with our homes, with our children, with our livelihoods, with our finances, with our friends, and in so many different ways. And the things that brought us to that point, we do need to focus on and cherish and hold, as opposed to, boy, there comes a time when people just turn south and all they can think about is the other person's flaws. We'll be back with Shattering Myths after the commercial break and have the opportunity to listen more to Frank and Diane. Hello, welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We have Frank and Diane, the longtime friends of mine, on the line. Frank and Diane share a similar path to my own, in that they were extraordinarily devout Christians, promoted Christianity, lived Christianity, were as a result, the way down to that path, and somewhere along the road, were one of the maybe one in a 100,000 that when the truth came knocking, they said, you know, I think I ought to check this out. Rather than the most religious mindset is to reject it out of hand, they embraced it, have accepted the terms and conditions of the covenant, and now. Love this whole opportunity, if you will, to share the similarities between our marriages. In fact, the Hebrew word for marriage and the Hebrew word for covenant is one and the same. To share how there are similarities between them. So, with that introduction, please continue, Frank and Diane.
Well, Diane and I were chatting during the break. Something that I said when you were sharing about friends that you were counseling in marriage and that they were basically just looking at the bad parts, the flaws, if you will, bite by bite. And I said to Diane, that's really not a problem. They had those faults when they married him in the first place. They just overlooked him.
Yeah. And I always tell people that are in that mindset, they're thinking about getting a divorce, and you always say, so, you know, under, you know, you made the best choice you could, and it did not turn out well for you because now you perceive that all of these faults exist. Do you know what the likelihood is that you're going to, in a, come out of this this divorce better than you went into it, and in a better mindset also, and that you're going to remarry and be happy and not repeat the same mistakes in your new marriage? I mean, you're dealing with odds that are 99% against you.
Yeah, just look at the statistics, and the statistics tell you that it's the failure rate is twice as much.
Oh, of course. When my married my wife, I'm still married to my wife says I married my trophy wife the first time around, so I didn't need to go out and have a midlife crisis and find a trophy wife the second time. Of course, she's right. But the when we were married, immediately after we were married, my wife became pregnant. She became pregnant on our honeymoon. So we were with not only one child but two children within almost, in fact, within 2 years of the time we were married, we had two children. The normal kind of having the opportunity to get to know one another, living together and being married, and just having the two of you as opposed to the focus is now on the kids. We didn't have. We both changed. I recall very early on that I went to her father and said, she can be a little tough to live with at times. I don't know about this. Dad said, I understand. I hold the same view. But let me give you some advice. He said, whatever you do, we'll support you. We'll support the kids, and we're going to support her, no matter what choices you all make. But here's my advice. Stay married. Figure it out. The things that you loved, emphasize those. Just ignore to the best you can and minimize the things that are an irritant. Don't respond to the things that are irritants, and celebrate the things that you enjoy. And that, if you do that, 10 or 20 years from now, you'll be glad that you did.
That's right.
That was his advice, and I think that's the same kind of advice that you give people.
Yes, that's very, very wise. And marriage is dear to my heart because I was single until I was 39 when I married Frank. And, of course, by then I had been well steeped in Pauline doctrine. And
yeah.
My parents had been married for many, many, many years. They were 50-plus years. And so I thought I came into this marriage with a lot of information that was going to make it work, and it was very, very difficult. I was a great negotiator in business, but there was no negotiating in our marriage. That's how I felt. So I really can see myself in the situation when couples come to us and then give them these. What I've learned is that there's choice, and there's chance, and there's crisis, and so.
And we'll have to deal with all of those after the commercial break. We also have Paul calling in from Toronto that has some Sabbath questions, and we'll deal with all of those in the long segment that will follow the bottom of the hour commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Diane was sharing the sounded like it was a list of the three C's of marriage, of which choice was certainly one of them, and change another. But you were interrupted by the commercials at the bottom of the hour, so I wanted to give you an opportunity to finish your list. And sometime in this segment, we also want to go to Paul, who has a question on the Shabbat. Go ahead, Diane.
Yes. Three words were choice, chance, and crises. And these are meaningful words to me because, it is the gift that we have as free will to choose. That's very dear. That's a lesson and understanding that I gained from the teaching coming out of Paul. Because all of my background had come from the women must submit, and even though I taught that inside of me when I was teaching that, there was this bad feeling. It just didn't feel right ever.
Right.
But
is there any? There is no choice in submission.
Right. That's how we used to teach it.
Yeah, and you have no free will under a Lord.
That's right. And so these are really important things to me. I mean, I've lived. Our life is so liberated, and our marriage is so transformed because now we have been observing and we have some understanding.
And you have actually choice. So, and with choice, with free will, you can have real love, the kind of love that is both emotional and also cerebral.
Yes.
And the Torah and the covenant is what brought us into the truth.
Yes. Yes, my view, and kind of the reason I shared the that preamble this morning is that once you come to know how glorious Yahweh is, how wonderful the covenant is, how liberating the Torah teachings are, while you could theoretically commit any sin and still be a member of God's family, still be looked at as perfect in His eyes, the fact is that that there is no motivation to reject any of the terms and conditions of the covenant, because the alternative now is so dark, so sinister by comparison to the freedom and love and choice and opportunity and growth and enrichment and empowerment that comes along with the benefits of the covenant.
I also learned, along with that choice, because we think we're doing good, but we still are sometimes locked in this matrix of right and wrong. Because now we've learned the right way, okay? So how do we learn? I had to learn not to be so aggressive in the sense that I wanted to make everybody else believe what I now understand and believe. And
Yes,
it would be nice if that would happen, but they have the same choice.
Correct.
And so we teach this within in that matrix of right and wrong.
Yes.
In that matrix inside of ourselves where there are all these things going on as we are in a place of crisis because, you know, we've made poor choices. We've made poor choices. Or by chance, something happened. We thought we were going to get an inheritance to pay off this other bill, but we never got it. So these things happen as we walk through, and then they kick up. So, but in that place, then, of the matrix of right and wrong, I learned that I have to slow down and calm down a bit and have respect for what I'm trying to build and what I believe is dear to the Father's heart, and that is a safe sanctuary and a place where we can begin to thrive and not just survive, because, you know, it's quite a painful.
Yeah. That's very much like what Yahweh was saying relative to his covenant, and David provides the perfect example, which is that once we are in the covenant, while we now know what is right and what is wrong, God is extraordinarily patient with his children. And so the fact that we do something wrong doesn't mean that he gives up on his relationship with us. And what you're saying is in the marriage, when a crisis occurs, even though we know right and wrong, it is not in our best interest to impose on the other party what we know to be right and to judge them to be wrong. That would be inconsistent with Yah's creation of the covenant and counterproductive to the relationship.
Correct. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yesterday when we were talking to you, made a point that while choice is such that we may have less than one chance in 4 or 5. Because the odds, when one of two spouses comes to embrace the terms and conditions of the covenant, the odds that the other spouse ultimately comes to embrace and accept the terms and conditions of the covenant are much better than society as a whole. Society as a whole, it's 1 in 1,000,000. And with at least what I have witnessed in the many thousands of people who have come to know Yah that have corresponded with me, it's closer to 1 in 4, perhaps 1 in 3, amongst participants in the covenant. And so you do have a pretty good chance of having your spouse ultimately embrace the terms and conditions of the covenant. and we should certainly hope that they do and share what we know with them. But ultimately, we have to relax and realize it's got to be their choice.
Right, and the problem in the midst of all of that is normally we're focusing on the wrong things. And right. Part of what we were talking about is that there's more to the marriage than just this one issue. We
correct.
Have to go back and look at why did we get married?
Correct.
You know, the male and female thing,
right.
Starting a family. Okay,
right.
We now have kitties and puppies.
Right.
We have in-laws, we have a house, we have friends and neighbors and relationships. And there, in a marriage, there is a covenant relationship being built even when it came from a secular viewpoint.
Right. And so your point was don't give up on those things easily. That
right.
Even though the other party may not choose to embrace the terms and conditions of the covenant, in your human marriage, that is one of many issues. And don't give up on that marriage just because the individual doesn't come to know Yahweh as you do, because you've got so many intertwined aspects of your life together.
Absolutely. And the other thing that we discovered is that we come into covenant with Yah is that our whole perspective starts to change. I believe that we actually become less critical and less problem-causing.
Yeah, you and me both. I agree. We become more accommodating, just as our Heavenly Father is. You know, Dode is the perfect example. I am glad that Dode David is the guy who taught us how to live and observe the Torah, because he was a flawed individual. And it says, you know, don't emphasize the flaws.
Right.
Emphasize the loving thing. Can we take Paul's question? He's been patient, and then we'll return to this in the next segment. Frank and Diane. Hello, Paul. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. It's a very interesting discussion. I mean, where can you hear a discussion where people speak so highly about Torah? You know what I mean?
Like, yes,
it's unbelievable.
Yeah, the only thing, Paul, that we love more, it's the only program for sure. The only thing that we love more than the Torah, which means teaching and guidance, which is why we love it, is the author of the Torah. I do love the author of the Torah even more than the Torah itself, although it's really hard to distinguish between them. They are so similar. You know, if you want to see God, if your interest is in seeing Yahweh as he actually is, you want to meet him, you want to get to know him, the place to meet him, to see him, to get to know him is in his Torah.
That's right. Very quickly, thank you for that.
Sure.
Very quickly, you spoke about Sabbath, quite often, but very simple question, very simple. Of course, we live in the world where Sunday is the day off.
Right.
Everybody starts working on Sunday, we rest on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
But now, people that have businesses, like, you know, service and so on.
I mean,
my heart is, of course, in the Shabbat. I understand. I observe it as far as the spiritually.
Right.
I know it's a day that, you know, it's a day of rest, and it's a day where we should observe it and, you know, and meditate on Yahweh and his word. But people keep calling you because it's a day of work. It's a day of work for some people.
Yeah.
So how do we deal with that? You know what I mean?
Okay, yes. Paul, that's a wonderful question, and I'm going to share my insights on this. But understand, my insights on this are just the perspective that I have on it. I think the perspective I have on it is the same as Dode's, who I think was the most brilliant interpreter of the Torah who ever lived. And his view was that everything in the Torah, including the Shabbat, is designed for the express purpose of helping us come to know who Yahweh is, coming to understand what he is offering us, coming to understand how we can properly respond to him and how we can benefit from him. And so everything in the Torah, including the Shabbat, is there to introduce us to who Yahweh is and how we can live with him. So my view is that since Shabbat falls into that along with everything else, including the instructions of what's good for us to eat and not good for us to eat, along with the path that we walk to God to become perfect in His eyes and to enter His home, that if we embrace, which you already have, the meaning of Shabbat, the purpose of Shabbat, the advantages of God in Shabbat, having said, because Shabbat means, this is my promise related to the seventh day to settle your debts so that you can settle with me. That is what is conveyed, and that God has a plan of 6 + 1 equals His desired result, which is man who was created on the sixth day plus God who is one equals God's idea of perfection, which is living together in this covenant relationship. So long as you are celebrating that, then from my perspective, and I think from Yah's perspective, you're celebrating the Shabbat. Now, as it relates to doing something that's part of your work on the seventh day, I'm going to tell you that while God would prefer us to spend the seventh day entirely with Him and doing the things that are family-oriented, celebrating family and covenant and marriage and the like, the Torah is a liberating document. It's not a set of rules that we have to obey. And so the very idea that you recognize what it represents and that you set this day apart and that you prioritize your relationship with Yah on this day, Paul, I think you're observing the Shabbat exactly as Yah intended. And I wouldn't worry about breaking any rule because there really are no rules. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We have Frank and Diane talking about marriage and the relationship between marriage and the covenant of Yahweh. And at the end of the last segment, we were talking to Paul, who Paul, I do want to just convey that, you know, I come from the perspective that that Dode David articulated in the 119th Psalm, which is that the way that we observe the Torah is to focus on the three things that are essential in the Torah. You know, when you, if you haven't had the opportunity, if you go to introtogod.org, introtogod.org, and you go on the Torah teaching section of that book, part three of the Torah teaching section of an introtogod.org is a presentation of the 119th Psalm. In the 119th Psalm, it is it is based upon, there are 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. Dode provides lyrics to a song based upon those 22 letters in the order that those letters come up in the in alphabetical order in Hebrew, emphasizing the character of each one of those letters. And the entire presentation, which is 176 verses, because it's eight verses for each of 22 letters, 176 overall verses. The entire purpose is to share with us how to properly observe the Torah. There isn't a single rule that is mentioned in any one of the 176 verses, not one rule. What he constantly says is that there are three aspects of the Torah that you ought to focus on. Yah's prescriptions for living, the terms and conditions of the covenant, and the means that Yahweh uses to redeem us to resolve the issue of sin. That's what he says. Focus on those. Come to know what they are. Come to understand what they represent. Respond to them. And you are observing the Torah and capitalizing on it. And you have a direct guaranteed entrance into heaven. That is what the 119th Psalm conveys. So, based upon Yahusha's example, where he engaged on the Shabbat, but he engaged on the Shabbat to help us understand Yah's testimony, and your presentation, Paul, sounds to me like you have nothing to worry about. That you're doing it exactly as it was, as Yah intended. But Frank, Diane, what do you think? All right. Frank, Diane, are you you still with us? You're, I show you connected, but what are your thoughts as it relates to Paul and the Shabbat occasionally, because he is works for a living, as most of us do, that he has clients who occasionally call him on Saturday, as opposed to, they're all in their religious celebration of Sunday, is the societal custom, which is why God wants us to walk away from societal customs. But, my thought was the Torah has liberated him, so there's no consequence in his relationship with Yah. Yosha engaged on the Shabbat, and it seems to me that the purpose of the Shabbat is to help us understand Yah's desire and plan.
We're in agreement with you, and we just say, let's not get religious about this. Many people will change from one religion to another, and they just make another day as religious as they did the day before. And Yah is not about religion in any way, shape, or form, about all the rules and rites and all of that that Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, and everybody else, and every religion has got all these rules and rites. It's about knowing and understanding. And we know that Yah says, you show up on the Shabbat, and I show up with you and sit on the couch and hang out, and we have a party. And it's more about knowing and understanding than it is about doing. And
there is an aspect of doing that I think is appropriate for Paul, and he's already doing that, which is, Yah does say, I want you to observe, and I want you to act upon what you've observed. Shamar, observe, closely examine, carefully consider, asah, act upon and engage based upon what you have observed. He does not have a word for obey, however. And right. So my sense is that when we observe his testimony regarding the Shabbat and come to understand what it represents, and we act upon what it represents, that we are observing it.
Right, we are. We're in agreement with what you were sharing.
Yeah, you in particular have the opportunity to talk to a whole lot of people who have transitioned from Christianity to Messianic Judaism, to either two-house theory or sacred name folks who have simply created a blended religion out of Pauline doctrine and rabbinical Judaism, and they've just replaced one set of rules with another set of rules.
That's correct.
Well, Paul, I hope that answers your question. Please call in more often. You are a great caller, and we appreciate your contribution to the program today.